Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, are you in the zone? What is the zone? Hopefully you are in it. And we can't be in it all the time, but we do our best. And to help us be more in the zone is a wonderful guest who has written many books, and he's been on Energy Stew many times. And I'm so glad to have him back to talk about his new book called Emotional Intuition for Peak Performance, Secrets from the Sages for Being in the Zone. Jason Gregory, welcome back to Energy Stew.
It's great to be back on, Peter. One of my favorite shows, to do. And you're one of my favorite individuals. So thank you.
That means a lot to me. Thank you. So, you know, this zone is a real nuance because we have to understand how our minds work that can preclude the zone. You know, our minds might think it's too smart to worry about zones.
Exactly. Well, you got to think about, like I talk about in the book, and we were mentioning before the show, like this idea of dual process theory. So you have like this whole two functions of the mind, right? So you have the analytical mind, which would actually, if you reside too much in the analytical mind, you would have no idea that there's even a zone to exist in, right? So it's exactly. Because when we talk about being in the zone, we're basically talking about essentially like the embodied mind. Like, so the hot cognition, which is like the intuitive and spontaneous functioning of our body. But we got to think about our body in the sense of it's also the mind as well, right? Like, we don't want to make this...
The whole package,
yeah. Like, we don't want to disembody our mind and our body. We've kind of fallen into this trap, you know, through like Descartes and Kant and all the way back to Plato, where we've kind of had this divorce of like, we are this rational, you know, mind lugging around this completely irrational body. But that's completely different to how they think about it, especially in Taoism, where you're this embodied mind, where it's more of a holistic mind, where your body is mindful and your mind is embodied.
So it's kind of that reflects everything else.
Exactly. And so coming back into that sort of hot cognition, where, like, you know, I can open and close my hands without thinking about it. You can do these shows very effortlessly, Peter. But that's from like repetition. And you're just so accustomed with it, right? It's become second nature for you.
Right, and so we see driving a car.
Yeah, like exactly like driving a car, right? You don't have to think about it anymore. But when you first jump in the car, you're all in your cold cognition, your analytical mind, where you're overthinking about everything, like, oh, I'm supposed to change the gear and the clutch a certain way. But then after, you know, a day of, you know, depending on anyone's, you know, aptitude for learning something, it comes along, right? And you have a second nature for it. And this is what being in the zone is. You can, we often look at artists and athletes or musicians and athletes when we see this. Like, you know, my wife's a violinist and she doesn't really have to think about playing the violin much. But the problem is, as soon as you start thinking about what you're doing, you start making mistakes, you know? Right. And as you were alluding to earlier, is that we're kind of overcompensating for this analytical mind, which it kind of acts as a blockage for us to be in the zone. But that's the culture that we're developing all around the world, the mentality through education. And
right. But what you talk about in your book is that you can't really be in that flow unless you're already skillful. And skillful takes cognition, takes cold cognition. And you really have to study the details, and then they become natural.
Yes. Yeah, it's an ebb and flow. See, what I should have said was probably we've overcompensated for the cold, and we're not allowing, you know, kind of more of a healthy balance between both functions of the mind, which is, you know, we see that all around the world. Where, you know, at the same time, you can have someone who's all intuition and all, you know, floaty, but they have no discernment and they have no, you know, ability to learn something comprehensively and to become good at it. And so that's something we need, like you said, like you need to learn the nuances, the details of something, of especially of a skill you're interested in. And then it becomes second nature. Like, you know, like I said about my wife, like for 5-6 years, it's just a grind. You know, you're learning finger positions, you're learning how to hold the bow properly. There's a lot of detail to go into holding this little wooden instrument. But then once it becomes second nature, like with driving the car, you don't have to think about it. And so, you know, when we see a great performance in sport, right, we always say, if we see LeBron James, for example, we say, oh, he's in the zone. And it's like, yeah, of course he's in the zone. He's been practicing basketball since he was, yeah, you know, a young boy.
Right.
And it's just part of his nature, you know. And
right. A lot of athletes find that zone, even if it's just running. You know?
Exactly. And the only thing that ruins their performance is when they get out of a healthy balance between cold and hot cognition. So, for example, if LeBron James was, if he was in a form slump, and we've all done this, right? When we're not feeling well or we're in a form slump, we start to overthink about what we're doing, and so then we don't trust our nature. We don't trust the process that actually got us to where we are as a peak performance.
Right, we can't second guess ourselves too much.
No,
exactly. But there are times where we have to review the skills, and
of course, yeah. And you don't want to overthink anything, because I mean, you have to have that healthy balance between both cognitions, because, you know, again, if you're overthinking, you're not allowing your hot process to do its job,
right?
And you know, so obviously,
but there are too many people who think that they can be in this hot cognition, you know, this intuitive place, and it gives them all the information they need. They don't need to have developed any background. They don't need to have done any homework to know right from wrong, for instance. The universe will tell them right from wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, there are times when we need to have some background to know what we're talking about, and then we can tap into our intuition and be more appropriate.
Actually, a lot better. Like, you know, they talk about in Zen about being the ultimate like state of a human being is this idea, is this concept of being immediate but also appropriate to each and every situation.
Exactly.
So the intuition is that refined that no matter what life throws up to you, you will have the appropriate response. So yeah, and that can be coming from the universe or whatever, but it'll be appropriate. But if it's through a filter of, say, if it's your hot cognition is very weak, and you don't have a lot of good discernment in life, and then you'll just say, if you just blurt something out, right? And say if it you blurt it out, and it may be true what you blurt out, but it's insensitive to people around you and so forth and so on. It's kind of not also, you're not reading your terrain properly as well. You know,
you have to see the big picture in a way that's both hot and cold.
Exactly. Yeah. But so, like, you know, the cold allows you to read this life, right? We can read this life, you know, and we can see what's happening around us. You know, as humans, we develop this prefrontal cortex to, you know, stay away from danger and you know, when we were evolving on the savannah. But, you know, overcompensating for it becomes a problem, because then we're always in security and protection, and we're not allowing life to just happen and trusting life. But as we've been talking about, there's a whole other realm to that. If you don't have that interface with life, and you're just intuitive, and it's problematic, because,
right,
you know,
not enough. Thinking of martial arts.
Yes.
And in martial arts, you have to have developed incredible skills. And I was in martial arts. I was in a karate dojo in my 20s down in Chinatown. It was one of the most elite dojos in the United States. And there were a lot of national title holders who were students in the class.
Yeah.
And the sensei, the teacher, was amazing. And what he was teaching, beyond the techniques, beyond the strategies, well, beyond the physical strategies, were life strategies. He wanted to, you know, he would give us these quizzes of situations that we'd be in. And he'd say, now, how would you resolve this using karate? And you say, oh, well, create a karate chop or whatever, you know. No, it had nothing to do with that. Maybe it's just stepping out of the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so it was all about strategies and using whatever facility you could to be successful. And I met him years later. And it was interesting because I had been in national competition and I was at a stage as a black belt that I couldn't keep at it because it was too dangerous because I was at too high a level. So I, you know, I had to step back. And then years later, I got together again with this teacher, this master, and I was describing my life to him. And he said, you are living a martial arts life. I'm so impressed. I'm going to add to your black belt. I'm going to give you additional degrees to it because you represent karate and martial arts in the way that I try to teach everybody.
Yeah.
And so I was thrilled, but I saw that, yes, I go about life trying to be as wise as I can, not as smart as I can, as wise as I can.
Yeah.
And it really makes a difference. And looking back on my life, there were, you know, there were so many very, very difficult situations I was in. And I always like to say, you know, maybe I got harmed many times, but I was always the last man standing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that we win all the battles, but we have to win the war.
There's a long game.
Right. So, but that's what the whole idea is, that don't think that you're going to outsmart everything with cold cognition and win all the time because you're smarter. It's that you have to have that part of you that knows better anyway.
Yes, that wiser self.
Right.
Well, I like how you mentioned martial arts, Peter, because that's perfect. And the thing is that, as your master understood, is that martial arts is really a lifestyle philosophy and practice, really. You're learning how to live through martial arts. And as you know, I mentioned a lot of that in the book. I mentioned a story of my brother-in-law when he was a young kid, Sungkyu, and he was learning Hapkido in South Korea. My wife's South Korean. And when he started going to the dojo, all he was learning was how to fall. So how to absorb a blow and sort of move with it. And this is his introduction to Hapkido, you know. It's great. But he was up because he's just a young boy, and he was upset because he's going home to his mom and dad going, I want to learn how to strike. You know what I mean? I want to learn. But that's not how it works, you know. So first you learn how to move with a blow, and then you know how to react appropriately to the situation, you know. And this also, you know, inculcates like humility and all of these virtues that we have as human beings that sometimes we can't get any other way, because if we're in just a educational environment, you, as you mentioned, you're only taught how to be the smartest, in air quotes, in the room, right? But when you go to learn martial arts, you're learning life skills. You're learning how to become humble, how to respect other people, how to have honor, and also how to move with life efficaciously. So like tough times will come, but you're not one of these people who are easily pushed over. You're flexible. You know, you are flexible and you know how to move with life. So.
Right, and that's what I was saying, that I was harmed many times in life, but I was never knocked out.
Never knocked out. Yeah, exactly. But that's part of that training, right? Like you learned that from martial arts. It's on a very subtle level. I mean, like it's not something you openly talk about in the dojo. But
the humility is being able to regroup after you've been attacked. You know,
yes.
And, you know, so that you're always in a state of creation. And if you're not humble, you can't be.
No, no. Well, a lot of people confuse humility with humiliation these days, right? Yeah. They think it's a form of humiliation to be a humble person. And it's like, no, it's one of the greatest virtues a person can have, is having this sincere humility and almost like a childlike innocence, is something that, you know, a lot of us don't have. You know, you would know, as an older gentleman, you're still like a child in some sense deep down. You know, you enjoy certain things, and that innocence we should not rub out of ourselves, you know. But the way that we're developing our world, focused just on the cold cognition and the analytical mind, is that that's not beneficial apparently to us, you know. Right. Because we need to succeed in our chosen field and this and that. But often the people who do succeed are those who are humble and still remain that childlike innocence, which is ironic.
Well, I'm looking at intuition and how to be intuitive. And you can't be intuitive if your mind is active. If your mind is trying to deduce information, then that's your mind. But intuition is, it's called the higher mind, is another place where your cold cognition has to be totally erased. You have to be that innocent. And you have no idea what you're going to hear next, nor an opinion about it. It just arises, and you have to learn to trust it.
Well, this is why in Taoism there's an emphasis, and a lot of people don't think that this has anything to do with wisdom, but there's an emphasis on play. So, you know, we are developing a world where we don't have much fun anymore. And if we do have fun, it's usually at other people's expense. But like, really play, you know what I mean? Having this sort of playful mind where you down-regulate your cold cognition, and you allow the intuitive responses and the joy to emanate from you, you know, like just in everyday life. And I don't want to say that we should turn play into a practice, but it's very important that we, you know, have a sense of ease in our life and don't take everything so serious.
Let's also make it a sense of wonder.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well said. A sense of wonder. And, you know, the thing is that, and I talk about that in the book a little bit, is that when we focus, when we don't have a sense of ease and a sense of wonder and a sense of play, we go down this other path of being serious, and we take everything, you know, we become oversensitive. And then what you see as a result is you see mental health problems. And, you know, look at the most overeducated societies in the world, right? If you look at South Korea, for example, one of the highest teen suicides in the world, because it's a cold cognitive training program they're putting their children through, and they're not allowing them to play. So, for example, when you go to middle school, you go to middle school from 7 in the morning to 11 at night. Could you imagine? Like, you're just producing robots coming out of high school, right? So, and my wife actually went through that process, and she still suffers from hypertension, even though she's been out of school for, you know, 15, 16 years. But because they're put through this process of just living in this front part of the brain, what we would call the mind, right? This prefrontal cortex, the hot cognition and the intuitive and the playfulness and all of this, you know, in the larger region of the brain is not being activated. It's just remaining.
What cultures raise their children? But I mean, obviously, native cultures might raise their children more holistically, you know.
Yep.
But you know, so the Western mind has inculcated South Korea.
exactly. Well, you know, like Far East Asia, like even China now, China and Japan, they're all gone with that sort of South Korean model, where they think that, because they want to compete with the West, right? They want to compete with America and Europe and, you know, Canada and wherever. And so their way of doing it is that, well, if we just over-educate our children, we're going to be at the top of the heap eventually, you know? And it's like, well, that's not actually quite how it works. Like, because even like, say, for example, all of the brilliant minds in America, for example, they came from, you know, sometimes very unique backgrounds. And, you know, there was the opportunity for their mind to develop ideas which weren't sort of regimented through an educational lens.
So what does it foster? I mean, what does it, what do we need to think about? I think fostering happiness is what we really need to think about, is, you know, what, not happiness from being cold, cognitive, successful.
Yeah.
But happiness from joy and wonder and innocence and play. And how much of that do we allow in our lives? And maybe really we'll be much more successful human beings in this world if we know how to be more that way.
Definitely. Well, if we went down that path, we wouldn't have people suffering from depression and suicide and so forth and so on, because they would be content in their immediate life, right? Because they would be extracting joy from their immediate life without comparing their life to, say, someone who is successful in air quotes, because we only started like looking at and comparing our life through the analytical lens. I look at Peter and I go, oh, he's successful. He has all of this and that. And then you start doubting your own life. And so you have this, it's really a mind trick, right? You're confusing your reality with someone else's reality. Whereas if you're content, I'd be happy for you because you're living your best life. You know, you're living your best life.
It has to be without cold cognition identification. In other words, you can't try to figure out your success through your logical mind.
No.
It has to be your more of your heart, the heart space. You come from the heart and you know if your heart is singing or not.
Exactly. Well, look at when there's a study and most people have, when they've been asked what was their happiest time of their life or when they felt like the most peace or contentment. And most people say when they had time in nature. So no matter whether it's Central Park or anywhere else, just being sitting there. And it's funny because like when you think about that, nature doesn't provide any sort of entertainment, right? Other, you know, you just sort of, you are there, you're absorbed in the experience with nature. And it's funny that like the study they did was overwhelming, that people said that that was when they felt the most happiest, was when they were just, their mind had rested and they just sit in there, right? as opposed to being on Netflix binging all day, which, you know, which is a whole other, I'm not saying that's bad, but it's interesting that sort of energy that you're in when you're watching, you're binging on Netflix, right? Your mind is agitated.
Well, there's a laziness also because you're receptive rather than creative. And to me, I think, you know, the greatest pleasure I get is like swimming and running and doing playful things that are very physically active.
Moving your body, like it's one thing we don't do these days. Like we've become such a sedentary lifestyle. Like we don't even move our body. We don't go for long walks. You know, we don't do any of that. You know, we watch other people do it on YouTube.
And I'm watching my 3.5-year-old granddaughter, and she's just so happy when she's playing ballet or, you know, doing fun exercises and jumping around and exploring her abilities physically is where she's the happiest.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And that's, you know, we as adults, we can still tap into that too. It's not something isolated to children. Like yourself, you're an active person. You know, you get a lot of joy just from being active, right? It's a big part of who you are.
Right.
But if you were to sit home and just watch Netflix all day, you don't really think about, watching Netflix is really who I am. I mean, I don't think you'd ever hear anyone say that, right? Like,
but we can love a lot of the programs, but they're not us being us. They're just us being receptive. And
yeah, they're just it's a passive activity, right? Yeah. It's different to, like, for example, if you have a passive activity in nature, where nature, like, you kind of, there's a feeling of sort of connection in that environment, like,
yeah,
because you're part of nature,
you're communicating, you know?
Yeah, exactly. you're not really communicating with Netflix. It's just a one-way stream. Right?
So it's so much fun to talk with you. And
you too, Pete.
Thank you. And Emotional Intuition for Peak Performance. And your name is Jason Gregory. And you have other books that are incredible. We've done a number of shows, I think, about a recent book called Fasting the Mind. Mm-hmm. And that's really about also a lot of what we talked about today.
Yeah. I cover Fasting the Mind actually in the book too, a little bit.
Sure.
Well, in Emotional Intuition.
Hard to get away from it, because the more that we can allow ourselves to free our minds, the better.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that's a good medicine, especially for this current situation, right?
Yeah, right. We really need to trust the process. We have to woo weigh it a lot.
And, yes, yes.
practice Taoism and get out of the way of our opinions, because we don't have any, we can't have valid opinions, because things are unfolding in the strangest, most unpredictable ways. So all we can do is just know that the process is bigger than our minds can comprehend it.
Yeah. So and have a different, I mean, you don't have to have a different outlook, but instead of like opposing people because of their views or whatever, reach out to people in the community, you know what I mean? And like, just be positive. I mean, be positive as much as we can with each other, you know, like.
Right, away from politics.
Yeah, away from politics, and trust each other to a certain degree, you know what I mean? Like, because if
as
we don't-
humans.
As humans, like, because we've gone through a lot, right, in the past. We went through two world wars and we're still here. You know, we've been through the Spanish flu and that 100 years ago, you know.
Right, so it's just part of human life here is to deal with trouble that we rise above.
Exactly, and the strongest are the ones who can, you know, stave, I like what we mentioned about with martial arts, right? You're not blown completely over. You might move with the rising tides, but you don't lose your center.
Right.
And we really need those pillars in the society at the moment, because a lot of people are easily getting blown over when we need to be a little bit, like you said, a little bit ooh-way, a little bit effortless. And
so we have more to talk about, because we're really at the end of the show, but we always have
something no problem.
To talk about. So we will continue. So Jason Gregory, how can people locate you?
Oh, they can find me at my website, jasongregory.org. Or I'd say if you're interested in my information, go and find me on YouTube. I have a regular podcast and a lot of shows and documentaries.
Thanks so much, Jason. Thanks again for being on.
Thank you for having me on, Peter. Always enjoy it.
Good. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at Peter at HeartRiver, H-E-A-R-T, river.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening. Thank you.